Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Now, despite the challenges posed by the pandemic, Irishman Anthony Furlong has managed to make his dreams a reality by creating a science fiction psychological thriller called Rising Wolf. From his father running the local cinema in the Wicklow village of Roundwood to working with Mike Myers on Irish film Pete's Meteor, film has always been Anthony's first love. Well, after 20 years of working in finance, he put all his chips in to found his own company and produce his debut feature-length film. And Anthony's on the line now all the way from Australia, which is where you live. Is that right, Anthony? You do live there?
I do, yeah. My wife is Australian and all my four children along with her. So, yeah.
Okay, but let's take a look. We'll jump in with the movie first and then we'll go to the movie last as well, and I'll get some more of you in the middle. Yep. Just we're talking here about one of these thrillers. It's a bit like that movie with your man whose name I can't remember suddenly, in Buried, when he's underneath the ground and it's fright. Like, you're basically in the one spot and you're trapped. Isn't that it?
Yeah, that's exactly it. She wakes up kidnapped, trapped inside this futuristic elevator in a super high-rise building in Shanghai. So, yeah.
Super high-rise, 120 floors up, by the way.
Yeah, I know. That would make it about the third or second tallest building in the world. So it's a pretty awesome size.
So, firstly, I have to ask, how much of this is you? I mean, was this tapping into your own fears?
Yeah, it was. I was working in the city in Sydney many years ago, about 13 years ago, and I had come out from the meeting into a corridor to get the elevator down, and there was a maintenance guy operating it and fixing one of the elevators in the center of the building, and it's just the ease and control in which he was using this tablet device to just, you know, control its speed and its movement going up and down, and I was just, you know, someone who's afraid of heights and an imagination, as you'd imagine you'd need to be a writer. I was just, the first thing I was thinking of, God, I hope he doesn't hate anyone in particularly in this building. And I hope that person isn't me, because you just imagine the power that person could have.
Yeah. Were you ever sitting on a plane, eating your meal or watching a movie, thinking of the exact same thing about the two guys up front and the two people up front and the power they have?
I do. But I have other fears, like the aircraft just suddenly, the door comes flying off and I just go sucking right out that airplane. Right. So yeah, I never sleep on a flight.
No,
ever.
I never sleep on a flight either. Never. Absolutely never. Yeah. I'm the only one with the light on over my head coming back from a long place. Okay, let's start all this again, because, you know, if I say tapping into your own fears, there's a guy who's just in control of this lift. I presume, by the way, when he was, you know, shooting it up and down and doing things with it on a computer pad or whatever, I presume there was nobody in the lift, was there?
No, the lift was on a gimbal, which is it's an automated lift system that, you know, moved maybe about 3 feet. Just I wanted that because I wanted the actress to have as much sense of movement, reality to the performance as possible. But during the shoot, one of the stunt people were in there and the gimbal malfunctioned and everybody freaked out, including myself and the actress. And so we put an end to the gimbal. So the whole film is shot just basically standstill. So you have cables attached to the stunt person and the actress, and they get thrown right up into the ceiling. It's obviously professionally controlled, and then dropped, and then the cameras sort of move. So everything was sort of done between cables and handheld camera movement.
Because, like, this looks like the kind of movie that could possibly have been made in COVID. It's quite contained, let's put it that way. Was it?
Well, no. So it was for the second 50%. So the first 50% we shot just before the pandemic hit. So we were very fortunate compared to a lot of movies in Australia that just had to shut down, and of course around the world. And I had just gone home to see my family in Wexford and see my friends in Dublin and stuff. And just when I came back to start the first real proper director's cut, and then the whole which the visual effects guys need, and to start their job, and then obviously the composer, who is, you know, David Hirschfelder, who's an Academy Award nominated music composer and BAFTA winner. He, you know, they all need me present, and they need a film cut. And so the pandemic hit, studio everywhere shut down. Obviously, everybody knows that story. And Fox Studios was just empty, so we were the only production in there because Warner Brothers and all those had shut down all the major films.
But I mean,
from
you had an idea for a movie like this. I mean, the idea came to you, and then like suddenly it does need an awful lot of special effects, and that's one of the biggest thing about the movie, really. I mean, not so much like in a superhero-y kind of way. I don't mean it like that, but like the special effects that you might have had in your brain, there they are on the screen. I'm pretty imagine. Were you cool with all that kind of thing, or were you expert in all that kind of thing? So you weren't even expert in making a movie, were you?
No. I, you know, this is it's very odd working in a world and even in finance when you're dealing with a lot of people and you have to make decisions, especially where I finished in finance. I was the last decision maker. And so that comes with responsibility. If I make a mistake, there can be, you know, it can be catastrophic. And so walking onto a film set wasn't that different with respects to collaborating with people, you know, sitting down at tables, having meetings about what we're going to do. And so I would express myself. And what I learned about the process is the more emotionally you connect and describe what you're looking for, the more they can react and understand what you mean. Because it's a very emotional business. Even with the cinematographer, when I'm talking to him, And I explain some of the shots, what he's really looking for is what emotion am I trying to capture here? Because the minute he understands the emotion I'm trying to capture, he knows exactly what lens to pull out, what the camera needs to do. And then I would sign off on that. Once he frames the shot, he'd ask me, you know, am I happy with this? And then, you know, I say yes or no if I wanted to.
Okay, so listen, you're saying corporate world, you were in Dublin, you sold up or whatever. I presume you had enough money to do certain things like go to Australia and do things and maybe put some of that money into this sort of belief or dream or hobby or whatever it happened to be, and let's see what happens. So let's go back to even further than that, because this was how the dream happened. Because you're talking, I mentioned your dad, the local cinema, you mentioned it was Roundwood in County Wicklow, etc. And how much of a cinema was it really, or was it just in your front room?
It was just in the front room. We had a house there in Ballinasloe, and my parents had a decent sized living room, and Dad used to bring in you know that's when they had like small projectors, and he used to bring in, I don't know how he did it, I never asked him actually how he did it, but he used to bring in like films like Lassie and stuff like that, and he'd put it on the projector and shoot it, put it up on the wall, and then just local people in the area who knew about it would come to our house and watch the movie that he was putting.
Okay, he was a movie kind of person as well. Did your father, and here's a very pointed question, did your father provide the monkey in the Tom Cruise, what do you call it,
Ron Howard? Yes, he did.
What was it called again? Far Away or whatever. What was it called?
Far and Away. I think you're right.
Yeah, I think Far and Away. Yeah, that's right. With the Cold Kid Man and Tom Cruise. So in other words, like, you know, that's pretty cool to be able to go out and say, do you know something? My dad found a monkey that was in the movie. And by the way, while we're at it, were you a police officer with dog in The General?
How did you know that? Yes, I was.
If you look at all the credits of The General, it's police officer with dog, and it's you. It says you there, Anton Furlan.
I was working on that to help. Spielberg was just coming in to do a movie down in Wexford, and it was just, it was that or working with Mike Myers, and I wanted to work with Mike Myers. Mm. You know, anybody, you know, I think he's hilarious. And I was helping Dad out because he got the animals for that film, The General. And I was in Dublin, and so I was the police officer handling the dog. And all the kids and everybody, you know, I was storming the area in Sheriff Street in the film. And so all the extras were throwing lettuce and everything else. And they actually started to hurt the dog. And so we did it one more time. You know, I gave a bit of a warning about it. We did it one more time. And then I said that once we did the cut, I said, that's it. We're just not doing it again. And I remember John Voy came up to me right after that. And he said, fair play to you. And he was trying, you know, he was still staying in character, trying to put on the Irish accent.
Well,
and everything.
That's a story. I mean, the very first film set you were on, say in mid-teens or something, did that cement it for you? Say, right, that's it. I knew I was into this, but I never knew I was into it this much.
Yeah, I was 15 years old, and my dad, again, he was doing some animal handling. He started off with that before he became got into the art department, and I walked onto a period film that he was working on, and that was it for me, because you're standing here on one side of, you know, you're looking at a team of everybody wearing jeans, t-shirts, you know, Mikey, you know, watches, you know, phones or whatever, and then on the other side you're just looking at everybody in period costumes like in 18th century. And it was just one of those sort of mind-blowing sort of experiences for me. I just couldn't believe it. I was just, this is amazing.
Okay, but and later in life, I mean, you, as you say, you got into finance. You were a chief financial officer for a tech company. You sold the company in 2017. Yep. And so did you have a window to follow your dream or to follow the money? I mean, like, for instance, you know, you've said before, you know, even in Australia, that you love Australian movies. You mentioned The Castle being one of the greats, which it certainly is. And that. And yeah. Do you realise you were in a good place and you said, look, you know something, I've got the wherewithal, I've got the money, I've got the health, I'll do it.
Yeah, I was, I think at that stage of selling the company, I was pretty exhausted and done with that sort of financial world, because it is exactly what everybody, what it says in the tin. It is a very, while you're working with great people, it is extremely mundane. I mean, for me especially, because I have a very creative imagination, and to be in that sort of box felt very contained and controlled. I mean, it's funny that I went on to then do a movie about a girl trapped in an elevator, but it seemed to be, this is it. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't go back into that world, into finance. And I was, you know, you sort of get to a certain age in life, you're like, I need this sea change. I need to do this. I need to follow my dreams. I've always wanted to do it. And
well, you
and
did
my
it.
Wife supported me.
Yeah. Okay. So we're talking to Anthony Furlong, by the way. 51552 is our text. Rising Wolf is the name of the movie. And let's get back to sort of not so much like even trying to find it. I know it wasn't that easy necessarily, but you found Charlotte Best out of loads of actors mm-hmm. who came to do the gig. And like, this is obviously she's the main part in the whole movie. And the first bunch of the minutes of the movie, it's just trying to get out, wake up and see why she's tied up and wondering where the hell she is. And then the realization and just how horrible it is, etc. Did you tell her how much stress was going to be involved and how many days did this stress have to live for?
Yeah, I did. When I met her, she's extremely quiet. So, you know, that was the first worry is when you meet somebody who's quite shy, you have to quite sort of, shock them into, what's his name? Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds was in Buried, and I did point to an article that he did when he spoke about doing Buried and how he had to get therapy afterwards. Mm. He literally, for a month, he suffered, struggled with that sort of state of mind that he had to be in. And I sort of, I put that to her. I said, I'm going to be looking for that level of performance. And if not, if anything, it's even going to be worse, because we're going to be attaching cables to you. The stunt people are going to be there to support you, and you're going to be lifted into the air. And so it's not just, mentally exhausting.
No,
it's going to
but
be physically
actually,
exhausting.
But what is she like? What's she reacting to? I mean, like, there's a bunch of Russian baddies, and they've taken her CIA father. And if he doesn't tell them what they want to know, the lift is going to go down 120 or whatever is going to happen. It's going to be bad. Things will happen. Yeah. Point about it is was she looking at those three guys? I'd say not. Was she just having to react to no? In this scene here, your father is being hit on the head. That kind of thing.
No. So we had playback. So we shot all the stuff on the screen. We shot a week before she started. So all those actors had to play against camera, and they never got to meet Charlotte. And likewise, the other way around, when she was performing to that screen, she had never worked with the actors. They're not there. They've already gone and been wrapped. So she had an earpiece in her ear, and all she could do is listen and look at the screen and try to react like as if she's really, bouncing off other fellow actors and trying to get into character. So it was a huge challenge for any actor.
Okay,
to
well, a
do
huge
that.
Challenge for people these
job.
Days is to actually go out and see a movie. So like, this is about Rising Wolf, young woman bound and blindfolded, wakes up in a high-rise elevator, 120 floors up. You can see the trailer, all right, on YouTube. Where can one see the movie?
I believe it is. So it's on Apple TV. It's on Amazon Prime, that Prime Video. It's on Sky, Virgin, and Google. Is it their Google
okay meetings. And by the way, Fiona Donovan is the production designer on this, and I mean, it looks really great on that level. Do you get involved in that, or do you say, wait a minute, she knows what she's doing, so forget it?
Actually, there's a big collaboration between the director, the production designer, and the DP, the cinematographer, because of he had to integrate a lot of the lighting into the set, so that he didn't rely, like a lot of DPs put up a lot of gear all around the sets so they can light it. So he had to build all the lighting in there because the space is so small and we were shooting with two cameras. You had very little space to get camera in there, and we had to, you know, remove some of the wall panels for the camera operator, you know, to put a camera from one side to the next. And so that's the first thing. The second thing is then the color and the shade and the darkness between materials, because if it gets too bright, if the walls are too bright and the minute you put lighting on it, it becomes super bright. So we had to keep doing tests to darken the panels every time so that it was shoot ready. And
well, just in case people think, like, when I say contained thriller, that it all takes place in the one place. I mean, there is some supernaturally inclined plotting there. There's flashbacks to two little girls, but I won't go into the detail of all of that. You can find that out when you see it all yourself. And obviously, she is pushed to a very physical and psychological edge. And I presume on that 20-day shoot, did she come out of it alive okay, yeah?
She did. I think she's okay.
Okay, well, listen, I mean, like, you've made one. So what's next? Are you making more?
Yeah. You know, I've got a whole heap of them now. So there's a couple of distributors talking to me about the next one. And
this was a trilogy. Was this meant to be the first one of a trilogy?
Yeah, but you kind of, you know, you want to put it down and then move on to other things that really interest me. So, you know, that's my focus now, is to try and, I want to do something that's much bigger and has a much wider story than this particular one. Even though it's great, it's just, you know, you don't want to put yourself into a box. I don't want to anyway. I mean, eventually I'd love to come home and do one in Ireland. About Grace O'Malley, the Irish pirate.
Okay, and, so hold on. There's been a musical about that, hasn't there, on Broadway? I think there has. Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. Anyway, listen. Good man yourself, Anthony. Thank you very much indeed for talking to us in the program today. Anthony Furlong, Rising Wolf is the name of the movie. Thanks a million, Anthony.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.